Okay, we're good.
Good morning. This is the Committee on Health and Human Services and Housing. It is Friday, March 22nd, and it is about 9:10 a.m. We're going to be hearing Senate File 314 from Senator Eaton, Autism Spectrum Disorder Health Insurance Coverage Establishment. We have a number of testifiers. I know that those who have been organizing the testimony this morning have asked the testifiers to stay focused on their testimony as to what the issues are in the bill. That helps us stay focused on the things that we're going to be talking about here, and that we have asked you to be succinct and focused and to the point. So with that, I will go ahead, Senator Eaton, and you can present the bill in whatever form you'd like. Is there a delete all or any kind of an amendment?
There is an amendment, Madam Chair, A2.
But this is not your first stop, correct?
Correct.
So would you please explain the A2 amendment?
The A2 amendment adds on 1.22 the narrow developmental and behavior health treatments and management that was inadvertently left off the last committee. Yep.
Any questions from the committee?
Same the amendment.
We do have a quorum, although it doesn't look like that, but we do. So I can say that because then we can take an action on this amendment. All those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. The amendment passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Sorry, Senator Eaton. Please proceed.
Thank you. The Autism Task Force began a couple years ago before I was part of it, and my previous successor, Linda Scheid, was the senator on the committee, along with Senator Senjum, and we had Norris Lawick, and anyway, there were a lot of people who put a lot of work into this, including the current chair, Brad Trahess, who was unfortunately not able to be here. And I just wanted to acknowledge all the work that everybody has done that that I'm sitting up here representing. It's basically an insurance mandate that requires all health plans offered in Minnesota to cover treatments for autism spectrum disorders. 33 other states have similar mandates. And this bill has been attempted more than once in the legislature before. In fact, this language passed through the House on 2009. So I will let Mr. Erickson here explain more.
Thank you, Senator Eaton, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Erickson. I'm here representing, as legislative counsel, the Autism Treatment Association of Minnesota, representing some dozen providers of ABA intensive, early intensive behavior treatment, which you'll hear more about today. Madam Chair and members of the committee, we first of all very much appreciate the fact that you've gone out of your way and scheduled an extra hearing on, when you said, Madam Chair, it was March 22nd, I'm sure you were very pleased to say it was March 22nd, and you've taken some time on that day to have us have this bill heard. We appreciate it.
Excuse me. I appreciate your comment. I would like, because there's so many of you are here today on this bill, to explain what's being said right now. Today is the last day, as maybe you know that, for these policy bills to get through both the House and the Senate, any element of policy. And the reason that you're seeing many absent chairs here is not because of a lack of interest in this issue or of your concerns this morning or out of disrespect for the fact that you're here to testify to us. It's because there are multiple meetings occurring at the same time, and our committee members are on multiple committees. So they get pulled back and forth between the committees, and especially at the end like this of this time, because everybody in every committee is trying to get those bills through today, the last day. So please interpret the situation in front of you in that light, not in relationship to what it is that's being presented here. So thank you for reminding me to say that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. And again, this is for the audience, and as you know, an extraordinary courtesy that you've paid to the author and to these people in this audience to have this special hearing today in light of how much else is going on. Madam Chair, the Senator Eaton explained the bill, and it's been described. This bill did pass the full House and two committees in the Senate in 2009. It's long overdue. We are one of, 32 states have passed this mandate. And I know that in the legislature, mandate is sometimes viewed as a dirty word. We proudly bring this mandate to you because that's what insurance is all about. It should mandate the private insurance carriers to provide treatment for autistic children and therefore support their families in a way that treats autism just as any other disease. There's no scientific or appropriate or moral reason that the insurance that the people in this audience buy and the people in Minnesota buy should cut off and say to families with autism, ASD spectrum children, you're not good enough. We're going to say we're not going to provide that. You may hear later today two things, that it's not a proven therapy, and I'm here to we tell you the evidence clearly disputes that. And we have plenty of individuals in the audience who will be happy to testify to that argument. You'll also hear that it's too expensive and too it will be too much of a burden on small businesses. I want to tell you that the burden on small businesses and the public is if we don't pass this bill. This bill puts and lets the private insurance companies pay their fair share, carry their fair share of the burden for providing health care, which all of us need, and these families particularly. Madam Chair, the guts of the bill is contained in the Section 2, Subdivision 2 of Section 1, which is the health plan must provide coverage for diagnosis, evaluation, assessment, and medically necessary care of autism spectrum disorders, including a number of the traditional defined definitions of that kind of service. You will also hear that this, I suspect, if the opponent testimony is repeated, you'll also hear that anybody can diagnose, especially the members of my provider group, can diagnose it and serve people as they wish, as much as they wish. That is patently not true. It requires a medical diagnosis by trained medical personnel. Plus, I can assure you that DHS and the rules that you've adopted for all forms of insurance that deal with the autism at all make sure that progress is being made and that the efficacy that's been demonstrated in ABA is, and the money spent to treat children is well spent and not unnecessarily spent. Madam Chair, I'm going to then go and bring three of our witnesses that are listed on the material in front of you that are personally involved in this and to bring you their story. Then we will step aside, Madam Chair, and we'll reserve the rest of the time to answer any questions from the committee. We have a room full of experts, far more knowledgeable than I, to answer specific questions that the committee may have and rebut specific issues that might arise and put a question in your mind. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to first call on Jonelle Burnham, a parent. Then I'd like to call on Joe Mose as an example of what this kind of treatment can do. And then I want to call on Tisha Mehdi to tell you the impact on families. And we will reserve the rest of our listed testifiers, respect the committee's time, and be ready to answer questions after all of the testimony. Madam Chair, thank you, if I may.
Thank you. Yes. Ms. Burnham, please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Chair Sharon, members of the committee, thank you so much for this opportunity and holding a special hearing for us. My name is Jonelle Burnham, and that was my husband and my son that were here helping get these materials to you. In 2009, my husband and I were living in Texas when we decided to start the adoption process and move home to Minnesota to raise our family. We were so lucky to be present for the birth of our adopted son, Will, who will be 3 next month. At 18 months, a year and a half ago, Will was diagnosed on the autism spectrum by specialists at the University of Minnesota. It was terrifying for a short time, but we quickly connected with a network of knowledgeable and caring individuals who helped to guide us. Our will was visibly disconnected from people, including us, his parents. He didn't acknowledge people coming or going. He never made eye contact. He spent long periods of time by himself, not playing with toys the way they were intended to be played with, but by pulling them apart, picking out the circular pieces, and spinning them over and over and over. He had little to no use for the world at large. The specialists at the university prescribed early intensive intervention therapy, or ABA. Will has been receiving intensive therapy at the Lazarus Project, a nonprofit in Plymouth, for more than a year now. The changes in his behavior are dramatic. One of the early goals his therapy team identified was working on eye contact, teaching this beautiful little boy who lived in his own world to find and connect with other people. They worked on engaging him at school, and we worked on engaging it at home, and by last summer, he sought out eye contact. I know to someone that doesn't appreciate this, eye contact may sound like a small thing, but imagine trying to navigate in this world without it. And I watched him hand out those materials, and when he looked at you and said hi, my heart does a small leap of victory every single time that happens, because that he does that is huge. At age 2, Will made virtually no sounds and said nothing, no babbling, nothing. We encouraged him just to make sounds, and even a small grunt was a significant amount of work for him. Eventually, he learned to generate a handful of sounds, so we started trying to turn those sounds into words. Finally, we got a few words. His verbal communication skills are certainly a gift, but no one would accuse my little boy of being too wordy. My husband and I have witnessed this therapy and its inspiring results in our little boy firsthand. Our goal is to mainstream Will for kindergarten. We are currently in the optimal window of intense brain development preceding age 5, and every single moment of therapy is a true blessing. At Will's last appointment at the university this past December, Will's doctor said, quote, "This is the progress we want for all of our kids." Countless parents have witnessed this therapy do amazing things for our children. There's a young man named Joe Mose that lives and works locally, and he's going to tell you his story this morning. Joe's in his 20s, I think, and I'm quite sure that I am not the only mom of a child with autism that looks at Joe and says, "I hope my little boy turns out just like him." I've heard ABA criticized in these hearings because it doesn't work for everyone with autism. Of course it doesn't. I'm not aware of any medical treatment that comes with a guarantee. But it works for my son and for many others, and it's marvelous. It's our best hope. Autism is not going away. We have to face this problem, and we should face it today by treating our children. If we ignore it, we risk that a significant percentage of the children that intensive therapy would have helped are left locked inside themselves, and the government will need to support them in the future. The long-run costs of failing to provide treatment for these children will be substantially higher than the cost of providing treatment now. One can hardly debate this point. Some estimate this cost as high as $3.2 million per person, which is not surprising when you contemplate supporting someone for 30, 40, 50, or even 60 years. In addition to knowing that this therapy works, we can all agree that kids matter. Kids with cancer matter. Kids with brain tumors matter, and kids with autism matter. I don't believe that anyone, including those opposing this bill, is seriously suggesting that these kids are trivial or that we ignore them. So this debate must be about how we pay for this treatment to treat our children. The insurance companies are asking you not to make them pay for this therapy, but the insurance companies are one of the primary players in our healthcare community. Surely, the insurers shouldn't get to enjoy the benefits of participating in our healthcare market without bearing its fair share of the burdens, too. Autism is a fact of the current healthcare environment that we cannot ignore. I appreciate that this is an expensive therapy we're discussing. Please consider that expensive treatments, those that would have devastating financial effects, were exactly the purpose for creating insurance pools. Somewhere along the line, insurance became something used to pay for every sniffle, but the most critical of the insurable events are the big ones, and this is one of them. Some small business coalitions are coming to these hearings and saying they can't afford to pay for this therapy. Please recognize that these coalitions aren't representing their full constituency. There's a wonderful woman named Tracy Reed who testified on this bill in the House. In addition to owning and managing her own business, Tracy is the mom of a little boy who has autism and had ABA therapy and has been mainstreamed. Tracy testified, "I am small business and I need this coverage." The statistics of autism means that the majority of small business owners probably do not have kids with autism, but that some of them do, and their employees certainly do. This coverage will help those people. Furthermore, not all small business coalitions are opposed to this bill. In fact, I understand the Rochester Chamber supports it. Some of small business is asking you to place this cost somewhere else, but we need small business to participate in the healthcare community that actually exists in Minnesota. That's a community with autism. I attend these hearings. I've heard people testify that they've experienced both the successes I long for, like mainstreaming, as well as fears that have played out in my own mind. I listened to one devoted mom who has three children with autism.
We're well past the time, so I need to have you focus, or you'll be, or the others will lose time that they need to
okay,
have to communicate
I'll finish
their
up.
Message. Thank you.
There's a lot of debate about the dollars and cents behind this bill. Neither side has been able to bring irrefutable numbers to the table. I have some hard results from the specialist assessing our will at the university. They are fantastic results. After a year of therapy, based on standardized tests, Will has made 2 years of progress in some areas, and in fine motor skills is ahead of his age. He is a remarkable little boy, and we were just tickled the other night when he lifted his arms above his head and said, "Yay, I did it." That was his first full sentence. These are the results that matter to me and the other parents of children with autism for whom this treatment is medically necessary. Please consider them as it comes down to making your decision. Please support Senate Bill 314. Thank you, and thank you, Senator Eaton, for bringing us here today.
Thank you, Ms. Burnham. I understand that it's Joe Mose who is going to be testifying next. Would you please come forward and introduce yourself? And then Tricia Mette is next, so be prepared.
All right. Joe. Well, thank you very much for allowing me to testify today. My name is Joe Mose, and I've come here today in support of the Autism Treatment Insurance Mandate because I know from personal experience that appropriate treatment provided at an early age can greatly increase the chances of improvement and maybe independent living. I was diagnosed myself when I was 24 months old, and my case was so severe that I could not speak or give eye contact. I would spend most of my time staring at a wall or flapping my hands. The child psychiatrist who placed the diagnosis warned that I would be living in an institution at the time I turned 10. This real-life worst-case scenario is why I find myself blessed to be a part of a devoted family who sacrificed so much to help increase my odds of living a stable, productive life, especially when insurance coverage for autism treatment was non-existent. All expenses were paid out of pocket. After 13 months of traveling the country to consult the most respected experts in the field of child psychology and autism, my parents discovered, by pure chance, a treatment method that would eventually result in my recovery. I was one of the first participants of the Lovaas Applied Behavioral Analysis Program at UCLA after its study was completed in 1987. If I was any older than I was when I began the program, I would not be the same person I am today. The hours of therapy were long and hard, but it didn't end in the clinic. In addition to the 40-hour week in the clinic, my mom, who learned Lovaas therapy quickly, taught it to me with the same energy and passion as the therapists on campus. Getting myself to look at the therapist in the eyes was the most difficult skill to learn. But afterwards, I responded to this treatment so well that I completed the program by 8 months. By the time I entered kindergarten, I was mainstreamed into the school system without the need of an assisting aid. Since then, I have graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts and now work for a respected IT company. And I should also mention that I am a taxpayer, a law-abiding taxpayer. I know that I am not the only one who can benefit from this remarkable therapy. I have met many people affected by autism who have led to live successful lives. Between the times I received treatment and today, over half of the states of the union have passed this insurance mandate, which has granted access for autism treatment to thousands of families that would not have been able to afford it otherwise. Our time to join this reoccurring trend has been well overdue. Minnesota provides the best health care in the country, and coverage is given to treatment for every disease and disorder imaginable. Why ignore autism? The average cost to take care of a child with low-functioning autism is approximately $3 million. This mandate will be a relief on our budget, but most important, it will give our children affected by autism to build a future. Treatment, no matter how intensive therapy may be, does not guarantee fast improvement or recovery, but to be given a chance to live a successful, independent life is far greater than no chance at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And are you a happy taxpayer?
For the most part, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Moes.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And now, Ms. Tricia Met.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee persons. My name is Tisha Metty. My husband, Ryan, and I are the parents of two children, Allie and Aiden. Our son, Aiden, has autism. Today, I'm here to share our family's story. My hope is that you will have a better understanding as to how critical the appropriate insurance coverage is to the autism community, which sadly is growing at epidemic proportions. Aiden was born April 2005. He developed on track or even ahead of schedule at all of his well baby checks. He was happy, interactive, verbal, and loving little boy. Then, within weeks of his 15-month checkup, he regressed dramatically. He lost his language. He stopped responding to his name. He began having gastrointestinal issues. He stopped sleeping. He became aggressive, fearful, and seemed to have literally left the world that we all live in. The many sleepless nights that Aiden and I shared gave me a ton of time to do research. Our family was willing to do anything to get our little boy back. We did find a variety of possibilities, and ABA was on top of that list. In fact, ABA was prescribed for my son Aiden by two developmental pediatricians, one neuropsychologist, and one psychologist who all specialized in autism. And across the country, we went across the country. Yet our insurance wouldn't pay for this. ABA is expensive, and although our family was financially okay, there was no way we could afford ABA out of pocket at the level he needed. We were blessed to be able to secure a loan for a three-month trial just to see how it went. Within 2 weeks of starting the trial, we knew. The therapy sessions were horrific, but at the same time, they were amazing. Aiden was furious with the therapist, but he was back in our world during therapy. Even if it was only for a short time, I knew that my baby was still in there, and I finally became hopeful again. My family and I believed in ABA so much, my husband was willing to do whatever it took to get the correct insurance coverage, so a job search began. But finding insurance for ABA or autism coverage is very, very difficult. Finally, after four job changes, we were blessed to find a self-funded ERISA plan, and ABA was covered. We were lucky enough to get a Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance policy. However, this new job meant many other changes. My husband had worked very hard in his career. He was in upper management, but chose to leave that job to become a delivery man. The career change meant a huge salary cut and a 5 to 6 day work week of 15 plus hour days. I'm married, but I'm a single mom. With insurance coverage and ABA in place, Aiden made great progress, but we knew that there were better programs for him. So in July of 2011, we moved to Minnesota, leaving behind our entire support system. The move was very difficult for our son, and he became extremely aggressive, more so than he had ever been. Our daughter spent her last summer before moving to college locked in her room, and I even sent her away with family for a week just to get a reprieve from the beatings. I was afraid of my child. His strength was frightening. Imagine for a minute your child, your grandchild, hitting you, kicking you, punching you, headbutting you, spitting in your face. A six-year-old did this. My thoughts were, what happens when he gets bigger? What if he hurts me and I can't take care of him anymore? What do I do if he won't stop hitting me and I have to call for help? Will the police take him from me? And what will they do to him? In September 2011, Lovas started therapy. Within weeks, the aggression decreased, and eventually he became almost, the aggression decreased and eventually has become almost non-existent. We still do have our challenges, and occasionally it does pop up in some situations, but it is at least manageable. Today, Aiden is doing awesome and continues to make great progress. In fact, he attended one of the January House committee hearings with me, and he did amazing. We are so thankful, even though we still have a ton of work to do, we now believe he will recover and get to live life on his terms. With all that being said, even with our private insurance and TEFRA as our secondary coverage, our annual out-of-pocket medical expenses are extraordinary. We recently completed our 2012 taxes, and with two insurance policies, our out-of-pocket medical expenses were almost 40% of my husband's 2012 gross income. At the end of the day, we all want what's best for our children. I think most of us here would move heaven and earth to ensure that the best is possible for kids with autism. Recovery does happen, as you heard with Joe. All we need are the tools necessary to give them a shot. Some will fully recover and some will not, but the therapies will absolutely improve the quality of their life and allow them to be the best they can be. I'm appealing to each of you today, please support this bill for my family, for all of those currently affected, and for those families who are unfortunately yet aware that they will be joining the autism statistics in the near future. There must be equality between those receiving ABA through the MA TEFRA program and those with private insurance plans. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story. I would be happy to answer questions if you have them.
Thank you. I think we'll hold off on the questions for right now. We now will be moving to Idil Abdul, if you're ready to present, and Jay McLaurin. And again, I would just ask that you be succinct and focused in your message. And if it seems like it's getting redundant, I'll give you a little cue.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Good morning.
Ms. Abdul, would you pull that microphone a little closer?
Oh, sure. Is that better?
That's better for me.
All right. My name again is Idil Abdul. I have a 10-year-old son with autism, and I'm an autism advocate for usually low-income and minority autism children whose faces are usually not here. I'm a member of the Minnesota Autism Task Force, nominated by Speaker Zellers, and I'm also a member of the federal. And I must say that the current Autism Task Force, we never really had a chance to discuss this bill. It sort of never came up. And I'm also a member of the Federal Interagency Autism Committee, nominated by President Obama's administration, Kathleen Sebelius. I'm also a member of the Federal Subcommittee for Services, Policy, and Research within NIH, and I've just been invited a couple of days ago to speak at the United Nations about autism awareness in April. So if it's about autism, I'm on it like white on rice, they say in this country. First, let me say autism is a public health, and no one is saying that don't help children. My kid is one of them, and I would walk needles on fire for him. What we are asking is make sure that whatever we're asking for the private insurance kid is equally similar for the public insurance kid, and it's a way that's cost-effective and based on science. And autism is a public health crisis that must be dealt with more research needed in all fronts, and to find a cause, a cure, and better services. For example, a recent blog by the chair of our committee, Dr. Insel, who is also the director of NIMH, categorized autism into four areas: disorder with a genetic predisposition and an environmental trigger, a disability born this way — there are people that say we're just born this way — an injury from vaccine — those are people that say my child was all right till he got the immunizations — and a difference, and those are usually people that are self-autistics or self-advocate for themselves and have Asperger's. Therefore, no one in the country and no one in the world can conclusively say what autism is. Also, no one in the country or in the world can say which therapy works for all kids across the spectrum and across the lifespan. I must say that I also call myself the Elizabeth Taylor of ABA, because someone here said before that that everybody will prescribe 40 hours or what's medically necessary. And the reason I say that is because I've been through so many ABA clinics where they've said you either do 40 hours for your kid or nothing, because they wanted to maximize their benefits. And another time, we've taken 25 Somali families to a particular clinic that were ranged from age 3 to age 18, And 90% of those children were told, 40 hours for everybody, or we're going to discharge you. So you might not see their faces here. I assure you, they live in this state. They were born here. They are just as American as apple pie. And just because they don't understand the system, they're always given the short end of the stick. What we know is that early intervention works in child's early years. This bill asks unlimited hours of ABA for unlimited age forever. There is simply no controlled trial study for that. In fact, the LOVA study that everybody talks about was done in 1987 by Dr. Ivor Lovaas in UCLA, and it has been attempted, but never were the same results gotten. Plus, it was only 19 kids, and only 47% of them entered kindergarten without assistance. But no one followed up that research into adulthood. There are anecdotals, of course, patient and parent anecdotals, but I'm hoping that no research has been able to replicate that very small study. At best, and according to Agency of Healthcare Research and Quality, which is within the U.S. Health and Human Services, it is recommended up to 25 hours of ABA, social skills, and behavior therapy, as well as neurodevelopmental therapy for younger kids, and definitely not all ages and all hours. And I also must say this is really the first. No other state has done this. All the 32 other states people are talking about, usually they have early intervention or early intensive therapy for younger kids and less hours for older kids, and they follow the guidelines of America's public health, NIH, NIMH, and ARC and others. What current research says is that early intervention of both behavior and neurodevelopmental gives children a better chance. Yes, that is true. Thus, we hope that research should drive policy and what is funded and not patient or parent anecdotal. In addition, because of the new healthcare law in which ABA is not part of the basic essential benefits, if any state mandates ABA, they would have to cover to the tune of $100,000 per kid per year, and there are about 16,000 children at least in Minnesota, according to Minnesota Department of Education. Plus, there is no conclusive study that says this cost will benefit, and at best, the current study that Autism Speaks mostly cites has been given a poor grade by NIH. Thus, we hope that people think about the cost-effective, the unlimited hours, and the language of this bill. Finally, and the most important to me as a black woman, is that there's the issue of health disparity. Minnesota is one of the healthiest states in the United States, yet it has one of the worst health disparities for minorities in the country. According to research done by Dr. Mandel at the University of Pennsylvania, black and Latino children get diagnosed with autism years later and have less access to early intervention. The language of this bill will only add to that, and here's how. I'm almost done.
Thank you.
Assume that you're a provider. I just want to give you an example of the haves and the have-nots. Assume that you're a provider and you get two kids named Barack Obama. I thought I'd get your attention with that. All right, so Barack Obama A has private insurance coverage with no limit of hours and age or oversight, and the payer cannot refuse or deny the hours of therapy. Barack Obama B has a public insurance medical assistance, has a cap, the governor put in $12 million, $8 million thereafter per year, has lots of oversight by DHS who can refuse and deny or lower the hours of therapy. Which kid are you going to take? And remember, there is no shortage of autism kids. A smart business provider will take Barack Obama A with private insurance coverage because it'll be much easier to get paid under him. Think about that on how it will create two-tiered system of healthcare access for the haves and the have-nots. In sum, please, 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 please really, really think hard and long about making sure that access to autism therapy for all children is equal from the get-go, so that disparity is not increased and added to a boiling wound of health inequality and health disparity in Minnesota. Once again, the 32 states that have private insurance, there are only 9 that have public insurance, so think about that. And Florida and Washington State have actually sued the state Medicaid agency after the elected officials have only passed the private insurance. And so if this passes only for the private and we are discriminated against the low-income families, we will have to sue the state, and a judge will most likely sue in our rule in our favor. And then you will not be able to afford this. And one last thing I want to say is that I was here just a few weeks ago testifying about Senate File 246, how to decrease disparity in Minnesota. And all of you here were so adamant in making sure that happens. Here's your chance. Here's your chance to say Barack Obama, A, with private insurance, Barack Obama, B, with public insurance, are going to get equal access to the same services at the same time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now we have Jay McLaurin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jay McLaurin, and I represent Medica, but this morning I am testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which represents Minnesota's 7 not-for-profit health plans. First off, out of the gate, I want to recognize that there is a growing need to find effective treatment for children with autism, and we clearly have, I have personal sympathy for the people that are going through this and their families and trying to make sure that the needs of these children are being met. And we also agree with the prior testifiers that children with autism are a priority. I'm also pleased to report that since Mr. Mose received treatment in the 1980s, the movement of the industry has changed. Minnesota's health plans cover services for children with autism. Let me say that again. Minnesota's health plans cover services for children with autism. So I'm pleased to report that to the committee. I don't want you to leave today thinking that somehow there are not services available to these kids. At the same time, some of the children that have received services that are covered today could probably come in and offer similar testimonies to what you heard previously of the results of the services that are covered today and the results that they've had and impact that they've had on the children that have received them. So pleased to report that to the committee. However, also want to recognize we don't cover every possible treatment for children and people with autism. We have a number of different concerns with the bill, and I appreciate having time to be able to walk through a variety of those. First of all, the bill mandates coverage for a very specific type of therapy. So as you see in the bill on the top of page 2, it lays out that it must cover, or that we have to cover, these specific type of therapies in addition to a number of others. But what we know, and a number of the health plans, including Medica, we have entered into partnerships with providers to try to figure out what the most effective types of treatment are for children with autism. These are not things that we develop inside our offices. These are different types of approaches that we have developed in collaboration with the provider community. And based on those partnerships, we know that a single method of intensive treatment or a single method of treatment is not necessarily what may be in the best interest of the child. When prescribed by a healthcare professional, programs covered by the health plans may include a variety of forms of therapy, including some of the ones that you see in the bill, such as speech therapy, physical therapy, and occupational treatments and medications, based on the specific needs of the child. We know that each individual child, because the autism spectrum disorder is a spectrum, depending on where they lie on the spectrum, that should drive the type of services that are available to them that treats and addresses the specific needs that they have. In addition, we have concerns with placing specific types of therapies in statute. So as the science grows and evolves, as Abdul talked about the science, so I'm not going to cover that ground. However, when you stick a specific type of therapy or service in statute, it is something that is locked into place. So as the science grows and evolves around what may be the most effective course of treatment in the future, quite frankly, the industry and what we cover would be locked in, and we would have to cover these services, even if at some point in the future it was shown that it is not as effective as some other treatments that may be available. We also have some concerns with the new definition of medical necessity that's in this. There is an existing definition of medical necessity in Chapter 62Q.53, which states that healthcare providers in the same or similar general specialty as typically manages the conditions, procedure, treatment, or issue must work to determine the medical necessity parameters. So the definition that's in current statute allows an objective review of the treatment parameters by qualified professionals without a vested interest in the proposed treatment modality. Coverage for treatment with autism spectrum disorder should be subject to the same rigorous standards that is in state law today. It has not been covered as much, but I want to talk real quickly about the cost associated with this. It has been touched by a couple of testifiers, so I want to address this real quickly. In 2011, the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, which is Minnesota's high-risk pool, spent over $4 million on 70 patients for these type of services at one facility. So that's an example of some of the cost impact that we see of these specific type of services given at specific types of facilities. It's an incredible amount of money to spend on a treatment that has not been scientifically proven to be more effective than what is covered under private insurance today. So this additional expense, as had been stated before, will fall on individuals and small business owners at a time when healthcare premiums, particularly in the individual market, will be rising due to changes in federal law around these products. In addition to the cost that would be borne by the marketplace, this would also trigger a cost to the state of Minnesota. And quite frankly, I just wanted to raise that issue for the committee, and that would be better served to address, quite frankly, in the Finance Committee. I just wanted to, Madam Chair and members, talk about how more research is needed to know what the best and most efficient treatment is for children with autism spectrum disorder. Better research and data will guide treatment protocols. Health plans have a fiduciary responsibility to our purchasers, the people who pay our premiums for health insurance coverage, and to the enrollees who use these services. Healthcare coverage is expensive because the cost of healthcare is expensive. There is a need for services for children with autism spectrum disorder, but mandating this type of treatment when there is no effective research showing that it's more effective than what is covered today doesn't seem to be prudent at this time. The bill as drafted restricts the health plan's ability to fulfill that fiduciary responsibility that we have to our members. Thank you so much for your time, Madam Chair and members.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Please.
When you're talking about the naming in law of specific therapies that are not, at least in the basis of medical research, shown to be more effective than others, the research doesn't show it to be less effective either. Is that correct? And if it is effective equivalently, then why not include it? Why is there such a struggle to get it included in the benefit set?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the question. I want to give you a quote from the fiscal note that was developed on this bill 2 years ago. And I'll quote, since there is still question in the pediatric community regarding the efficacy of ABA and similar intensive therapies, it is possible that the value gained in terms of health outcomes would not equal the cost of providing this treatment for the state's insured population. So this was in relation to CGIP and applying this requirement to CGIP. It goes on to say that we expect utilization to increase as the health plans will be required to offer these specific treatments regardless of its effectiveness or appropriateness to the condition or patient.
And Mr. Erickson, what is the reasoning for using a different definition of medical necessity?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, let's take a look at that section, medically necessary care. It is slightly different than other definitions, and we'd be happy to talk to the health plans about something that has the that we can commonly agree on. The point, though, Madam Chair and members of the committee, is that this is medically necessary, described and prescribed by a physician, as you can see in other sections of the bill. So we have no problem reaching agreement in discussions with the health plans about what the proper definition of medically necessary is, but I do want to point out that it absolutely requires physician, trained professional diagnosis and prescription and monitoring in this bill of the process of the treatment. I also want to take the opportunity. Mr. McLaren says and quotes something that I think is simply not a fact. The fact is that this ABA, this the two kind of therapies, the therapies that are in number one and number two, Mr. McLaren does cover speech therapy. He does. His clients do cover occupational therapy, physical therapy. What they don't cover, and the point of this bill, is point one and two, ABA or intensive behavior therapy. And I'd like to suggest to you that that efficacy has been proven. You heard testimony, three testifiers today, which are living proof of that efficacy. And I point out the colored reproduction of the Autism Speaks materials that you already distributed. A very small list of the endorsements for the efficacy of ABA and this kind of therapy are listed on slide 15. And I'd be more than happy to provide, and will have to, I'm sure, provide to the committee as this process goes forward in the finance side of it, support for that proposition. We've heard and we hear that it is not proven. I respectfully suggest that Mr. McLaren is using old facts, old presumptions that support not covering this treatment.
Thank you. Let me just stay focused on my questions at this time. Yeah. Not more testimony. I would like to go back, Mr. McLaren, to your issue in the bill about the definition of medical necessity. What would you highlight again for me what the difference in a definition makes? What does the difference in a definition make for its application? I thought subtly you were suggesting that the current statute that defines medical necessity allows for a more objective determination of medical necessity rather than the determination by a provider who will be providing the service. Is that the essence of what I heard you say?
Madam Chair, yes, thank you for the question. That is, in essence, what I was saying, because the existing statute, 62Q.53, essentially says healthcare providers of the same or similar general specialty. So it's essentially trying to take what the consensus is in the same type of specialty instead of what a specific physician would prescribe. So it's looking more for consensus among the community of what the most effective course of treatment is rather than an individual physician.
And if that was an acceptable definition from the group here with this bill, it would satisfy your issues around that particular concern?
Madam Chair, if we went with the existing definition in statute, that would address our concern on that specific issue.
So you can have a continued conversation about that. I heard you be open to that, Mr. Erickson. Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm learning today. I have to be multiple locations at one time, and so I'm sorry I'm late to this conversation.
No, Senator Hoffman, I did explain to everyone here that the demands to everyone's time in here is in multiple places. So as you can see, Senator Marty, alleluia, is coming in. And alleluia Marty, so that we call him around here, is here, and... And so I did explain, for, and the other senators who have come in late, that of the contrast, that our coming and going is not related to the significance to us of what's being presented here. So please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I served 3 years on the Federal Interagency Coordinating Council, and we studied autism for a full year. And I wish I could have been here to be part of this whole discussion. And one of the things I noticed is, you know, Greenspan's work on the developmental individual difference, DIR. You know, there was the two camps had come, and there's good results in both camps. And I'm wondering, is this are we leaving Greenspan's work out? Because there was Dr. Greenspan's stuff was well noted as a Harvard MD in the work that he had done. And I know he passed away, but just I'm wondering if it was left out by purpose, or is there some discussion about adding his work in as well as far as medically necessity?
Mr. Erickson, did you want to respond to that?
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, I would call on Mr. Dr.
It's okay. Well,
let's see who's best here. Who would answer that question? Because I'm not the expert on that.
Would that be Eric?
Dr. Larson would respond to that, please.
Madam Chair, I'm
Dr. Larson.
I'm Dr. Eric Larson. I'm a psychologist here in Minnesota, and I'm the executive director of the Lobos Institute Midwest.
Can you pull that microphone right up close? Thank you.
I didn't have the amendment A2 that was offered, but I believe that contains the exact language that the senator is asking about, is the addition of in 1.22, number 2, neurodevelopmental and behavioral health treatments and management. So in 2009, when the first version of the bill was passed by the House and used as the model for the Senate bill, the U.S. Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research had not yet determined that developmental approaches were as effective as applied behavior analysis approaches, but since then they did determine and explicitly stated both the developmental as well as the behavioral as having sufficient support to warrant recommendation. So now we've added that line too in to address the senator's concerns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I would have been here, I would have seen the A2 and it's looking at me right in the face. So, thank you. Greenspan's work is well documented and well known. So I appreciate the update. Thanks. I'm good.
Senator Rosen,
thank you, Madam Chair. And Sherry Rideau was in my office yesterday talking about this, and I don't know if she's going to have a chance to testify or if you're off. Okay. And so I'm just starting to get comfortable with the bill. There are some questions I have about the Autism Task Force and the recommendations. So, Senator Eaton, was there some correlation with the recommendations coming out of the task force? Because obviously Ms. Abdul was mentioning that there was no communication from those task force. And I see they had a strategic plan report came out on December 12th, reported to the legislature on January 15th it came. And I haven't had a chance to look at those. But has there been work with this task force that has been putting a lot of time into their report? Senator Eaton?
Senator Rosen, yes, I was at these meetings, and we discussed in great detail what the recommendations were. The task force, we actually hired someone to help direct us into an organized form of relaying this information, and we met with the governor. And I don't know if Ms. Idle had missed those meetings or what the issue is, but it's very clearly what our recommendations were.
Senator Rosen? Thank you, Madam Chair. So perhaps when this bill, if this bill moves on, perhaps we could get that straightened out, because there is definitely people back behind you shaking their head no, and some are going like this. And so there's some confusion about what is in the bill and what the recommendations from the task force. My other question is, Is it necessary, Madam Chair, or maybe Council, to specifically say a treatment program such as LAVAS? And I know we briefly said that, but is there some way to keep it open enough for other treatment programs that are coming online that are effective? I mean, the 1.21 of the amendment does, I understand that's a very important therapy program, but it does make me uncomfortable to earmark programs like that in a bill. So that is something I would like to address.
I think the question is whether or not there are a couple of questions within your question. One is about the specific naming of a treatment in the legislation. And does that narrow, is this language narrow the opportunity for future researched future discoveries from being covered?
And, Madam Chair, to exclude other therapies, too. I mean, there I know there is intensive early intervention, behavior therapy, and so on and so forth. And perhaps that LOVAS therapy is included in the above definitions.
And we could have Ms. Kavanaugh, if you'd like to speak to that. On 1.18, I note that there is language that says including but not limited to the following. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. to me, that offers the opportunity for a broader mm-hmm. set of interventions than the ones that are listed here.
But, Madam Chair, I don't know if I may, there's a very specific answer to Senator Rosen's question, if I could.
Yes, of course,
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen. This specific treatment is called out very specifically for a very specific reason, because it is very specifically excluded in the health care plans that we are trying to affect. Let me read you the exclusion, the general exclusion in services for or related to intensive behavior programs for the treatment of autism spectrum disorders, including but not limited to early intensive. The same language in here is an exclusion, and this is a Blue Cross Blue Shield program. So we are here because, yes, Mr. McLaren is right, some ASD treatments, occupational therapy, speech therapy, are covered by the plans. Those plans very specifically and explicitly exclude this very efficacious treatment. And so we have called it out very specifically in the bill because it is called out very specifically as an exclusion in the plan that our clients buy.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator, did you want to follow up, Senator Rosen?
Yes, I have
Rosen?
A few more things, too, please. Thank you.
And then Senator Benson.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Mr. Erickson, that actually doesn't give me much comfort at all, because then we're really narrowing down. And you made a comment on your opening comments that kind of concerned me, too, that the insurance companies, quote, need to cover their fair share. And I think a lot of this in this bill could be mitigated without exactly saying that this type of therapy has to be in it. I think this is something that we are probably micromanaging at this level, and that is a concern for me. But you look at you know, there's one in 88 children. I just went onto the website to look. I mean, this is one in 50 of boys. So this is a very serious issue I think we need to take a look at. But in saying that, I also would like to take step back at some point in our work going forward and take a look at all the mandates that we make the insurance companies cover and see if perhaps some of them are outdated, perhaps we have our hands around them, maybe they aren't rising to the level of need as autism is. And we are, again, doing a pylon, and I think we should, in our spare time, Madam Chair, really take a look at the, what is it, 68 mandates now, or what will this be, Ms. Kavanaugh?
Yes.
Oh, you don't medical, know. No.
Madam Chair, I actually carried a bill for that for 2 years, and it got reduced to a study by the Department of Commerce to see if it's feasible to do a cost-benefit analysis on our 68 mandates. So we're getting there.
Senator Benson. Senator Eaton wants to respond here.
Okay. Madam Chair, thank you, and Senator Rosen. I would just like to compare this a little bit to another issue I worked on in the past, which was with then Commerce Commissioner Mike Hatch, in which we had to specifically put into law that women with breast cancer could have a bone marrow transplant, because all of the other insurance companies said it was experimental and was not effective. And finally, when we were able to get that included, women now are recovering because of that.
Okay. Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Rosen, and then Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then for Mr. McLaren, on 1.30 of the amendment, what does that mean exactly, that paragraph C?
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, so I think the language that you're seeing has to do with, quite frankly, the pre-2014 world of health insurance. Quite frankly, the world that we're heading into in 2014 and beyond is a guaranteed issue environment, guaranteed renewal environment. We already had a guaranteed renewal environment in Minnesota, so quite frankly, I see that as unnecessary because it's something we aren't able to do today in terms of renewal and won't be able to do in 2014 in terms of issue.
So it's redundant, Madam Chair.
It's not allowed under the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
As I read the language, Madam Chair and members, that's correct.
Okay. Madam Chair, we may need to take a look at that, too. And one other question, if I may, Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, why was CGIP taken out on 2.3, the subdivision 4? CGIP was taken out of the amendment. It was in the original bill.
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Senator Rosen, would you please state the question again? I'm sorry. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Erickson, in the original bill, you had CGIP that does not affect benefits available under medical assistance, Minnesota care programs, and these programs in CGIP must maintain current levels of coverage. You just took out the language of CGIP.
I do understand the question, Madam Chair, and Madam Chair and Senator Rosen. As I guess I didn't say in my original introduction, the bill as introduced is exactly the bill that passed the House and the and two committees in the Senate in 2009. In 2009, CGIP, state employees, it did cover this treatment. Okay. Now, at the end of 2012, CGIP, for the state employee plan, dropped coverage of autism that we're talking about. So what we've done now is not addressed in this bill by leaving CGIP out the issue of whether they were covered. The presumption that when the bill was introduced was they were covered, and we didn't want to touch that, and we left it that way. Now, for reasons who knows, CGIP no longer this year, for the last 4 months, does not cover state employees on this. So we have left this open for the process that you very much will be a part of, Senator Rosen, in the next committees, about whether to reinsert that benefit under for the state employee health plan. We, in our community, obviously, to be consistent and are consistent, say, yes, that is true. You should, if private insurance covers it, state employees should be covered. We think that's exactly right. We suffer a little bit in the fiscal note that's drawn because we contend that passing this bill takes pressure off the public systems and lets the public, the private insurers, carry their, I've said, fair share. Standing alone, our bill saves the state money. If we now decide, and as a policy, your committee decides we're going to recover state employees, there is a cost to that. It's a cost that you've been saving for 3 months, but was in last year's budget. So it gets a little bit arcane about whether we save money and whether it gets offset by the reintroduction or the reimposition or the reoffering, I should say, of the benefit for state employees. There are about 51, to our knowledge, state employees who have children that are receiving ABA services. That's the number we're talking about. But there would be a cost that, you know, you were paying it last year, you're not today. And you'll have to deal with that in your committee, Senator Rosen. Thank you for the question. Very appropriate.
Thank you, Senator Rosen, for the question. Is there somebody in the audience from CGIP if you wanted to ask anything further on this issue?
Perhaps in budget.
Okay, in budget. All right, great. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. LOVAS therapy is specifically called out. How do you get certified as a LOVAS therapist? How many of them are there in Minnesota? If you could help me understand.
I will call again on experts and the witness, either Dr. Larson or Dr. Moore, whoever thinks could answer that question most appropriately. And
please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm Dr. Tim Moore. I'm here representing the Minnesota Northland Association for Behavior Analysis. I'm the current president of the organization.
Pull your microphone forward. We cannot hear what you're saying.
Sure.
The acoustics are terrible in here, by the way, so that's why we keep asking for that.
Sure. My name is Dr. Tim Moore. I'm here representing the Minnesota Northland Association for Behavior Analysis. I'm the current president of the organization. We represent about 150 treatment providers, university faculty, educators, and students who are interested or practicing behavior analysis. And so the question was, how many therapists are there, I believe, Senator Benson, in Minnesota?
Madam Chair, if I could clarify.
Senator Benson.
LOVAS therapy were in this bill calling out to be added to statute. How do you get certified as LOVAS therapist, how many of them are there?
No, thank you for clarifying. How one becomes certified as a therapist, Dr. Larson, you may have a better in terms of certifying the therapist level, but I could answer. There are a couple of different nationally and internationally recognized certification levels that that organizations such as LOVAS and others in Minnesota would employ. The primary designation is board certification in behavior analysis, and that is the recognized minimum level credential to supervise and oversee a behavior therapy program, whether it's called a LOVAS program or early intensive intervention behavior therapy, something of that nature. There is an assistant level certification that many agencies will also employ, who are usually one step above a line staff behavior therapist. And I believe where there's some variability is in the qualifications of a behavior therapist, the person who spends the most time with a child doing one-on-one intervention. And if you like specifics, I think there are a few providers here in the audience who may be able to specifically answer how their agencies determine qualification.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm comparing this to the American Montessori Association has specific qualifications for their instructors to give them their imprimatur. But it sounds like LOVAS therapy might fit under the other definitions, and so it doesn't need to be specifically called out. Can you explain why it is so different than applied behavior analysis, intensive early intervention, et cetera, as is presented in the bill?
There's a lot of synonyms, and my understanding is, as it's presented in the bill, is on a list of included but not limited to. Applied behavior analysis is a broad field, has several applications, one of which is early intensive intervention behavior therapy. LOVAS is a style or an example of really intensive intervention behavior therapy. It's alphabet soup. There's some synonyms here that I know can be confusing.
So, Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, to Senator Rosen's question, what I'm seeing is applied behavior analysis is a high level, and then intensive early intervention behavior therapy is narrowed down from that, and then LOVAS is a very specific slice. And so I think that perhaps Senator Rosen is right that calling it out in statute is very limiting, and that we have sufficient language in the other categories. So I'm going to, if I can, make an oral amendment to strike line 121 and on line 20 insert after early intervention behavior therapy, comma, insert an and then at the end of line 20, change the comma to a semicolon.
Yeah.
I'd like to comment.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Senator, the again, I want to point out, first of all, Lovaas therapy is in some senses like Coke. I mean, it's a brand name, it's a kind of therapy, but it also could be called, it's ABA, Applied Behavioral Analysis. It's named for one of its originators, Dr. Eric Lovaas. But so the reason that it is listed here, and also another way of saying this is, as Dr. Moore said, early intensive behavioral analysis, there is an alphabet soup. But I want to suggest that, and I would respectfully suggest, we'll be happy to talk with you, Senator Benson, about it further, but the reason it's called out here is that it's called out in the exclusions of the insurance companies. So, for example, if you excluded the word Lovaas here, the insurance company can say, we'd like to, you didn't call out Lovaas in your mandate, so some services call it, use the name Lovaas, and therefore this statute didn't cover it. We're simply reacting to the way the exclusion is described in current exclusions in current plans. So I'd be happy to talk to you about it, but it is very confusing. They all really describe the same bundle of services.
And Senator Benson? And thank you for your final comment where they all include the same kinds of therapy, which just supports my amendment. We now have record evidence for the benefit of the plans that if this language goes forward, that Lovaas is a narrow slice presented under the applied behavior analysis. It fits under that umbrella. So now we have record evidence that applied behavior analysis includes Lovaas therapy.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. Senator Benson, I think what we're creating is a loophole, and that's what concerns me, because all the insurance companies have to say, this is a form of Lovaas therapy, so we don't have to cover it. And that really concerns me that we would leave that in the bill.
Thank you, Senator Eaton. I think we should move to a vote on this amendment. I'll have it restated. I think this is the crux of what we're here about, whether or not Lovaas should be articulated specifically, because it would still be allowed to be excluded underneath 1.19, in which intensive behavioral therapy is described. If it's not specifically stated, it could be excluded, as it is in the general exclusions document that's being presented. So the question is whether or not you want to be specific or not. And Senator Rosen has indicated that that's a new activity for the legislature, to be this specific in stating a therapy. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think to reiterate what Senator Benson was saying, if this is covered in the new language, which it is, and you go to the Lovaas website, and it does clearly talk about intensive behavior intervention, then it goes back onto the health plans to explain they really can't exclude Lovaas because that is covered in the definition.
Okay. Senator Marty, and then I think that this is the crux of the issue today, so we can discuss it a little bit further, and then we'll take a vote on this amendment.
Madam Chair, on Senator Rosen's point, I think the fact that the Lovaas website or wherever you were looking says that it is one of these early intervention behavioral therapy services or whatever, it still seems to me that that's not the issue. The issue is the exclusions on, I guess this was the Blue Cross plan. They say explicitly services do this, and they call out the Lovaas therapy is excluded. And if we strike all the other things in there and say you can't exclude them, but we don't strike this, it seems to me they'll just take their services for related to the Lovaas therapy and strike all the rest of the language that we've just stricken. I think Senator Benson's and your point is it's all one and the same, but obviously the health plans are using it to exclude it. And if you take out those words, they're going to say, look, you wanted us to exclude everything but that therapy. You wanted to prevent us from excluding anything but that, but you're saying this one's okay. I would agree if everybody's using the same terminology, but obviously regardless of what the Govas therapy page is saying, the health plans are saying, this is one we want to explicitly call out. And it seems to me the only way you're going to get around this for, you might, they might say, oh, well, we know what the legislature intended, but they're also going to say, look, we had it listed specifically. They struck every other option, every other exclusion we had, but they didn't strike that one.
Senator Rosen, and
thank
then
you,
we also have Senator Nelson and Senator Hoffman that would like to speak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But this, but we're creating a health mandate, Madam Chair, Senator Marty. So this is a mandate. This was an option from the health plans before, and there was only one health plan that was taking care of this. Now this is a mandate. This is law. So they can't come and go in and say we're going to exclude LOVAS after we pass this bill.
To this issue, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, on that point, yes, that's the decision. Do we want to allow them to exclude it or not? That's the whole issue, I think.
Madam Chair.
We're on the amendment. This conversation is on the amendment. I assume that that may not be where you're going. Haven't had a chance to get in. Is it to the amendment?
Madam Chair, I do have a couple comments to the amendment and other comments for later. But to this amendment, it's the exclusion in that we have in the exclusion page specifically excludes intensive early intervention behavioral therapy services. And the legislation or the amendment before us, the A2, includes intensive early intervention behavior therapy. And that is what LOVAS is. And so to either specify in law a particular thing that we've already said is required to be covered does seem to be rather redundant, and one would almost think it seems to be rather parochial, so to speak. And so my question would be, if in fact the A2 were to pass in its current as amended by the Benson Amendment, where intensive early intervention behavior therapy would be covered, would that not cover LOVAS therapy? In other words, the health plans could not come back and say, oh, LOVAS is excluded, because the A2, as passed with the Benson Amendment, would specifically say that intensive early intervention behavior therapy is covered. So my question is, why would we, as legislators, want to specify one particular type of therapy when we've already covered that generic type of therapy as being required? And I did hear you twice say that, well, the plans have specifically excluded it. Well, I would hate to be in a position where we had to write specific legislation for everything that a health plan excludes. But here we have the exact broad category, and so I'm still confused as to why we need to specifically write in a particular therapy that fits under the broad category we're already seeking to make sure is included.
And that is the debate. That's the debate. Everybody's going around the same subject here, so let's not go around it too often. Let's get to see whether or not we've got a decision
yet,
to be
Madam
made.
Chair.
On the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nienau.
I think I'm going to vote for this amendment. To put this in a little different context, if we were to make an attempt with MFIP, for example, and the cash benefit, and try to limit that to more healthy foods, this is kind of the equivalent of saying you can't purchase sugary drinks with a sugar content over a certain amount, including but not limited to Coca-Cola. I don't think we would do that. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't put the brand in statute. We should create the generic general definition. And as I'm listening to the debate, that's what I see this as doing. We create the generic general definition, but then we also say, including but not limited to this brand name. And I think that's just bad policy. So I think this is a good amendment. I don't think it hurts the intent of the bill at all.
Madam
it just
Chair,
keeps
I'm
some gonna, good
Senator
track.
Benson, and then you will have the last word, Senator, on this amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not used to taking insurance documents and cutting and pasting them into statute, and that's why I'm looking at this with scrutiny. To make statute reactionary to corporate decisions is not what legislators do. Number one. Number two, we have now had two experts
that are advocating for this bill acknowledge that LOVAS is a subset of something we're already going to request that companies cover. So LOVAS fits both under the ABA analysis, which we are specifically requiring, and it also fits under intensive early intervention behavior therapy, which we are also specifically requiring. And so we're getting to the point where we've narrowed this down so specifically that we're almost advocating for this. There's some brilliant psychologist or therapist somewhere that's going to come up with something that's as good or better than LOVAS, and then we're going to have to come back to statute and add that so it gets called out. Let's not be so specific. Mr. McLaren has now heard everybody who's advocating for this amendment say LOVAS fits under the definition we have. That's pretty strong record evidence. And so I think the LOVAS advocates are going to be protected even without the word spelled out.
Mr. McLaren, are you able to tell this committee that every health insurance provider of those seven that you represent, with the language being intensive behavior therapy is provided for in this legislation, that every one of those will cover LOVAS therapy?
Madam Chair and members, just to reiterate what Mr. Erickson and others have said is that, and I have a note from an expert saying it's LOVAS therapy is not necessarily the name of the therapy. There's some other name for it, but it's based on a study from a Dr. LOVAS back in the 1980s. So it is more affiliated with a brand name. There is a center named LOVAS. So according to even what Mr. Erickson and others have said, the type of therapy that's provided under LOVAS is a subset of a subset. So that's what they have stated. And to the broader point of putting these things in statute, Senator Eaton spoke of a bone marrow transplant requirement for people or women with breast cancer in statute. A couple years ago, and this goes to the point of not putting these things in statute, we and others came to the legislature to seek a repeal of that because it had become so far out of the norm of what the medical community delivered to women with breast cancer that at the time that we seek the repeal, a physician could actually be sued for trying to do that. So that
goes to
the broader
point. The answer to my question is no.
Madam Chair,
I'm asking for a response to my question.
Madam Chair,
no, I have the microphone, okay. Senator Benson, and I have asked a question.
Oh, so Madam Chair and members, what I was saying was that I was.
But the question, I know what you were saying. What we're discussing here is whether or not the broader language assures the authors of this bill that the seven insurance products that you represent will cover LOVAS therapy.
So, Madam Chair and members, to the extent that what Mr. Erickson and others have said that is a subset, to the extent that that is the case, yes.
Okay, Senator Benson and then Senator Eaton.
Yep, Madam Chair, I think my point is, if this bill is just about LOVAS therapy, then let's delete everything else and put LOVAS in. But if this bill is about expanding coverage to meet the needs, then let's be inclusive. And if people want LOVAS, then it fits under this definition. And I don't think we're harming anybody, but I think what we're doing is creating a carve-out. And while people will want LOVAS named, it's not what we do legislatively. As we're going through licensing and certifying childcare for the 15% extra payment, we're now fighting because we've got specific names called out in statute, and we've got a department working on how to not have specific names called out in statute, how we develop a framework for defining those childcare centers. So we put all those names in statute, and now we're working to take them out. And I'd just like to avoid that problem in the future, Madam Chair.
I think that's clear, your motivation and what it is you're trying to achieve. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To me, the point is that we have a number of parents here who assure me that if this is stricken from this bill that they will not be able to get the care that they need for their children. They have tried it through many methods and are convinced that not listing LOVAS therapy will eliminate that option for them. I am, to me, what it's about is these children who need a future, who need a chance, and these parents who need a chance to see their kids succeed. And whether we list things and have to come back next in 10 years and change them, I'm willing to do that. I think it's worth the benefits to these children.
Madam Chair. Thank you. A couple more comments, and then we will move on this amendment to this amendment.
Yeah, Madam Chair, a question and a comment. Senator Eaton, the parents that have talked to you and said they've not been able to obtain LOVAS therapy, that's under current law. Right. Explain to me how, if this becomes law, they won't be able to do that. What would prohibit them?
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Senator Nenow, the insurance plans specifically list that they exclude LOVAS therapy. And LOVAS therapy is a subset of the individual plans or types of therapy that are listed here. If that is listed, I assure you they will use that to not have to cover it. I've been working as a nurse in the community for a long time, and where there's a loophole, they jump through it. And I don't blame them. It's business. Some of these things are expensive. But I'm just saying, given that option, it will happen.
And then Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair, I just can't. This just seems to be a very big piece of this bill. And obviously, I'm in support of this bill, but as you know how I feel about really designating a treatment program when obviously it is applied behavioral analysis. We are making law here. We are making law. So this is a mandate going forward. I would be very surprised how the health plans are going to wiggle around this law. This is not going to happen. So if LOVAS is underneath this definition, and if we have to beef up the definition perhaps to cover LOVAS, that's fine. But to single them out here, I think is a grave mistake, because then we'll be singling out what kind of cancer treatment program, what kind of any type of medical treatment program in law. And I think that is very narrow. And I think Senator Nelson said it very well, parochial. And we don't do that here.
On the A2 amendment, not on the A2 amendment. What is the
oral.
It's Senator
oral.
Benson's
yeah. oral amendment?
Oral all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
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 Division.
Division. Division's been requested. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Raise your hands.
It's a raise of
hand.
Hands.
Sorry.
Excuse me. It's four. Okay. And all those opposed?
It's five.
Five. It fails. On the bill, on the A2 amendment, is there a motion or are there further questions? Oh, yes, excuse me, Senator Nelson, you're next.
Yes.
You are absolutely
Thank
next.
You, Madam
You've been
Chair.
So patient.
my real comments are to the bill in general. And, you know, we've talked a lot today about this important issue, and I know that ABA therapy is successful. I also know it's expensive, but I know it's expensive if we don't have a young, especially early intervention with these kids. So I understand that, and I support that. I have kind of two questions that are kind of that I think we need to address, and we might not address them here, but I think they do have to be addressed. And one does have to get, and one we've already talked about, and that's this new definition of medically necessary. And our long discussion here about the Benson Amendment or the oral amendment, I think that just shows the problem with legislators putting on medical hats and trying to determine medically what's required medically. You know, I don't have that degree. I can't specify what should be covered and what shouldn't be covered. I definitely want to leave that up to the people who have been trained in that area. I don't think that's what I was elected to do, and I don't think I have the expertise to do that. So we do have to leave those medically necessary up to the professionals and not try and do it here in this committee room. So I think that's something to, and I know you're going to work on that definition of a medical necessity, and I look forward to that. But now the bigger issue is healthcare is changing dramatically in a quick manner, ways that we can't even begin to understand how quickly healthcare is changing, not only obviously in Minnesota, but in the nation. And so my question, when this comes to me on the Senate floor, is going to be, how does what happens with this legislation, if it is enacted, how is that going to impact Minnesota healthcare law in the Minnesota Exchange? And then specifically, though, the feds are going to be coming out with two multi-state plans. I'm not sure when those are coming out, but the Federal Department of Personal something or other is coming out with two multi-state plans. And so we have to be so very, very careful that what we do in our Minnesota Exchange, when we write those market rules, we have to be very, very careful that in doing so, we do not put Minnesota at a disadvantage compared to these statewide plans that are coming out from the feds. And so it's unclear to me at this point how putting this type of legislation in law today would impact that. And I don't think I can get an answer right here in this committee, but I think that's something that we really need to address and understand in the broader picture of things. But let me just be very clear. I know that early intervention is key, and I know that ABA does provide that, but I think there are still some questions that need to be answered before this gets to the full Senate, and maybe those will be answered in the next committee. But particularly about how would this affect our competitiveness with the two multi-state plans as they will be coming out from the feds.
Thank you. Let's see. Senator Hoffman, you're on the list here. Do you remember what it was that you wanted to ask?
You know, it's Madam Chair, thank you. It takes me back to the years 2001 to 2004 when the Ivor Lovaas disciples on one side of the table and the Greenspan folks on the other, and this debate has not stopped to this day. It's amazing to me to see that, you know, yeah, we're all right. ABA, EIBI is a form of Dr. Lovaas, and I don't attend of Lovaas therapy, so we're getting hung up on that one word. Regardless, we know that autism is now the center's HRSA just did a report that I forwarded to you, Madam Chair, yesterday, that 1 in 50 is now the prevailing. That came from the Centers of Disease Control. That popped out. And it's amazing that we're doing this. Even 10 years ago, public health dollars are going to be going through the roof on a lot of this regarding autism. But I'm glad to see that finally, you know, we're getting in front of us a bill that says to the medical world, the health insurance providers, you got a stake in this as well. And so we're going to continually debate whether or not Ivor's name should be on this or not. But the fact is, even with 38% of kiddos, you know, benefiting from a Lovaas type of therapy, I think this is due diligence, and let's get this done. So I had lots to say, but I just wanted to make that point and
okay.
Move on. Thank you.
Senator Benson and then Senator Nienau.
And Madam Chair, I don't know if somebody from the Department of Commerce is here. I have a question. Is it Mr. Verkwitty? You just never get a break, do you?
Senator Benson, at your disposal.
Did you have a question for him? Yes, Senator Benson.
Thank you very much. You have been through the ringer in the last 3 weeks, and I'm glad to see you're still here. I had a question about mandates. We sent our essential benefit set to Washington, made a request that we allow to include them in the exchange. We just got our essential benefit set back. It does not include autism. Well, let me ask, does it include autism coverage specifically?
Madam Chair, for the record, Peter Brickwitty, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Commerce. Senator Benson, you've heard quite a bit of testimony from the plans and from the advocates that certain types of autism treatment are currently covered in the private marketplace. The essential health benefit set, which the state defaulted to, which is a health partners plan, does not contain coverage for these two particular autism treatment plans that are being discussed here.
And so, Sarah Benson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Brickwitty, so all the debate that we had about the exchange, nobody caught that this wasn't included. Okay, I didn't. I was in.
Be careful. We don't really allow yelling in from the audience.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Brickwitty, I was in a lot of hearings. I didn't see amendments presented. I didn't hear testimony. And so I feel like we're kind of stuck with the essential benefits set that's in the exchange, because it's my understanding, and Mr. Brickwitty, I this is a really detailed response, but it's my understanding there was a rule from either December 12th or December 16th of 2011 that said we can't change our essential benefits set until after 2014.
Mr. Brickwitty?
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, I would have to look at the language of the rule to answer completely positively one way or another. But essentially, that is the guidance that we have gotten from Washington, that we are locked into the essential health benefit set as it stood when the default was completed, which was in December of 2012. So there is a point, certain, and I'm just not remembering off the top of my head, that the essential health benefit set will be reexamined, I believe, in 2016. I can verify that for you with staff. At the moment, yes, the state is locked into the essential health benefit set.
Mr. Brickwitty, if it's not in the essential benefit set, it doesn't mean this law could not go forward. It simply would increase the fiscal responsibility of the state in relationship to the provision of this. So that would be an issue that will be explored in the Finance Committee.
Madam Chair, that's quite correct. Yep.
And Madam Chair, I'm just trying to – our insurance market is undergoing seismic shifts. And I'm trying to get all the pieces mentally in place because we're only impacting the small group and individual market with this benefit. And Mr. Brickwitty, I would ask you to please correct me. I'll watch you and you can wave your hand if I'm off. But we don't impact the fully insured market. We don't impact anybody then therefore governed by ERISA. We don't impact the self-insured. So we're on a really narrow part. Plus, we also have the carve out for any plans that are in the exchange, unless we specifically add this and invoke the state cost. Is that correct, Madam Chair? Or Mr. Brickwitty?
Rely on Mr. Brickwitty to answer that authoritatively.
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, I believe that's correct. The under the ACA, a state that adds a mandated coverage of a benefit that's not covered in the essential health benefits set puts the state on the financial hook for the cost of those mandated benefits for enrollees within the exchange. And so I'm hesitating somewhat because this, Madam Chair, recognizing this is the policy committee, and this issue I think is going to be debated hotly in the Finance Committee.
That's correct.
But Senator Benson, I think generally speaking, you've got it about right.
And I would agree. Senator Benson's raising an issue that is on my mind as well. And although we haven't spoken specifically to the fact that you described earlier about our public programs, this is not related to our public programs that also will continue to be a part. I know the governor has a proposal in relationship to that, but this is going to be a continuing struggle. But here, we're really focused on whether or not we think this is a good policy. And the separate issue is our capacity to implement it because of its impact on a variety of other public policy questions.
Madam Chair, just my final, the reason I was asking those questions, because we have a lot of very engaged, involved, passionate parents, but what we do legislatively can sometimes impact only a small part of the market. And I don't want to leave the public impression that all employer plans are going to have to conform with this law. I want it very clearly stated that this moves forward, there are still going to be gaps for some of those families. And so that was the line of my question, so that people understand the level of detail and complexity we're dealing with in the insurance market. And I just, my last comments, to the families that are here, when I am debating and arguing points on this bill, it is not because I don't understand. I don't have a child with autism, but one of my very best friends who lives in Texas, her second son, Matthew, has autism. And my friend here has a son with autism as well. And I sat at Matthew's dinner table with his family and watched mom stand the whole meal to help him use his fork and follow through. I have a little taste of the challenge that you go through every single day. And so I'm not opposed to your child receiving care. I want to make sure we have good law that works for everyone. So.
And then there was one more. Was it Senator Nino? And then we are going to vote.
Yeah, well...
make it brief, please. I need to move to other committees, and we've given this a long
time. I apologize, Madam Chair.
Time.
I think this is going to take a little time, so I'm going to move to strike some language. I'm going to move to strike lines 14 and 15, and on line 1.28, the word or, and on line 1, strike line 1.29, up until the period, and on line 1.34, strike the words or mental health professional.
Madam Chair, are we on the A2 amendment?
Yeah.
On the A2 amendment, so would you run through that just one more time? Do you
want
to delete line 1.14
and 1.15.
Delete 1.14 and 1.15.
On line 1.28, the word or. On line 1.29, everything except the period. Okay. On line 1.34, the words or mental health professional.
To your motion.
Madam Chair, the reason I'm making this motion is, and Senator Eaton, you can fix this in the next committee if you... I see what you're getting at here, but this definition is way too broad. When you look up this section of statute, this would allow, and this therapy, if it's prescribed for a child, is in the $50,000 a year range, roughly. And we would be allowing certain nurses, certain people with just a master's degree and a number of hours in occupation, a family therapist, a clinical social worker, all of those people would be eligible to prescribe this treatment. And if you want to get certain mental health professionals, you really need to drive that definition down much deeper than where it's at right now. I don't serve on the budget committee, so I'm not going to have the opportunity to revisit this, unlike a number of the members here. So that's why I'm making the motion here, Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Nino, I understand what you're trying to do here, but working in the field, I will tell you that the move is actually the other direction. They've expanding the scope of practice to help save money. They're having LPNs do what RNs could do, RNs do what doctors could do. And if someone is capable and competent in doing that, and it's less expensive, I don't see why you would want to exclude them.
Well, Madam Chair, there is no way a marriage and family therapist is going to be qualified to prescribe this treatment. There's no way a clinical social worker is going to be there's no way that this entire category of nurses is going to be – it needs to be scoped down. If this language is in the bill, there's no way I'm voting for this bill.
Senator Eaton, can you or whomever – maybe we could have staff say what is mental health professional has meaning given in section 245.4871, subdivision 27. Would somebody sort of give me a read on that?
Got it right here.
Oh, is that what you were referring to? Thank you. Okay. And while we're looking that up, was there somebody else? Senator Rosen, did you have a comment?
No, Madam Chair. My comments are not on this amendment.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, there are seven categories of professionals under this definition. And as Senator Nino indicated, it does include a clinical social worker in psychology, a mental health professional, who's in psychiatry, a mental health professional, a marriage and family therapist. And then there's other credentials that need to be in addition to that title. And then in allied fields, a mental health professional must be a person with a master's degree from an accredited college or university. It is a pretty broad definition of mental health professional, I guess is Senator Nino's point.
Okay, thank you. So are you wanting to have us vote on this, or are you wanting to have a continued conversation with the author about changing and narrowing the definition of who can do the
Madam
assessment?
Madam Chair, I will not have the opportunity to see this bill again as it moves into the next committee, so I'm making this motion here if the author wants to scope that down and redefine that in the next committee. The committee can consider that. But with this definition as it is, it's highly problematic in my mind as a matter of policy.
Would you respond to that, Senator Eaton, as the author of the bill?
Madam Chair, I agree we don't have time to pare this down right here now, and we'll work on language in the next committee. But
I think that I want to make sure that I understand, because I will be on the next committee, Senator Nino, and Senator Benz will be there as well, and Senator Rosen, that what I understand, Senator Nino, you would like to have happen from the author is that the person who can authorize this or say that is an indicated appropriate therapy has to clearly have the skill set or the scope of practice that allows for that specific kind of determination.
Madam Chair, yes, this is we're not prescribing an antibiotic here. We're prescribing highly intensive, highly expensive therapy that needs to be. We need to define who has the qualifications to do that. And this definition captures way too many people that clearly are not going to be qualified. If this language comes out and the bill passes on to the next committee, the author can reoffer for the committee's decision. She could reoffer this language, or she could reoffer something that's much more scoped down, and the committee could make the determination, are these people qualified in addition to the attending physician? Are those people qualified or not? If this language stays in, it might or might not be discussed. It might or might not be changed. But if my motion passes, clearly we're going to have that changed, and I expect with 99.9% certainty that question will come up in the next committee.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair,
Senator Benson, then Senator Eaton,
and Senator Eaton.
And then we should vote.
With the Section C, we say physicians and licensed psychologists. So those are two highly professional, well-trained professional categories who already have the authority to do all of the things prescribed here. The mental health professional definition is really broad, and I know we talked about having people work at the top of their license, advanced practice nurses and so forth. Maybe we need to take Senator Nino's language and suggestion, delete mental health professional, and then work between here and the next committee to find out who the professionals are that are qualified to manage this process, because we don't want marriage and family therapists thinking they can manage something as challenging as autism. Family might need marriage and family therapy, but it might not be the right person to manage autism.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Benson, I was trying to say that I would accept the amendment.
Oh.
Okay. Senator Marty.
And Madam Chair, a couple of things I wanted to add real quickly to this. One is the mental health services. It looks like basically postmasters with at least 4,000 years supervised, 4,000 hours of post supervising. But the point I was going to make
they've
is
lifted the requirements since
right.
I was.
You got to live longer. Madam Chair, the point is if a marriage and family therapist was doing this, I think they'd probably be at high risk of sanction for going outside of their scope of practice. I think the language, as Senator Nino points out, needs tightening. And whether you do it next committee or whatever, but I think the point is there are a lot of people who are clearly qualified in here who should be allowed to, and I don't think you have a problem of somebody in a unrelated field doing it because I think they'd be high risk for sanction of practicing outside of their scope of practice. But having said that, the language is not very artfully done right here, and we should.
Senator Eaton supports the oral amendment of Senator Nina. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment passes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Eaton, for accepting that amendment. That was a very important amendment, and I'd just like to say I hope continue on with the discussions with the plans and the advocates to the task force, because I want to support this bill all the way to the floor, but I still have a little problem with singling out a therapy when just going online there's a lot of new therapy that is coming down the pipeline, the stem cell autism protocol. I mean, we could start earmarking this in law ongoing, because it's such a it's such an issue that's changing, I'm sure, daily. So I certainly want to support the treatments that are working, but also want to keep it respectful.
And may I say in conclusion that I also have heard the discussion about why we would have a different definition than is in statute for medical necessity. I'll be looking for evidence that has had further conversation and some reasonable resolution, if it's possible, when this comes to the next committee.
Madam Chair, if I might just make a commitment on three, I heard three things that we need to talk about. That you just referred to, this issue about the mental health professional. I'll point out that the mental health professional doesn't have the ability to prescribe. It's only in the monitoring. But we do need to tighten up that definition. I agree with that. We'll come back with that. So all of the amendments and discussions I heard today are appropriate. I take it they were all attempted to be helpful to the bill, and on behalf of my client and Senator Eaton, we will work with her and those of you who had these concerns to work that out, and I want to make that commitment to you, and we'll certainly talk about that medical necessity definition with the health plans also, Madam Chair.
All right, so Senator Eaton renews her motion that we pass Senate File 314 as amended and it be referred to Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. It passes. Thank you very much.
Good discussion.
We are adjourned.